Hi, this is Marion Nessel. I'm the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University and a longtime fan of Heritage Radio.
Like Marion, you too can support Heritage Radio Network, a member-based nonprofit radio station operating out of Bushwick, Brooklyn.
I've been on it countless times. I love being interviewed. The interviewers are always really well prepared and fun to talk to about the issues that matter to me the most, about how we can change our food system to one that's healthier for people and the environment. It's just invaluable to have an independent radio station that's dealing with these issues. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful asset.
Support Heritage Radio Network by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to The Main Course without Patrick Martins on heritageradionetwork.org. I am your host, Alexis McLaughlin, here with everyone's number one, Philip Gilmore.
Everyone's number one.
Everyone's
that is my official
one.
Title, yes.
That and the mayor of Bushwick. And the interim vice chancellor of fun.
Yes.
Very excited. We have Rebecca Greenfield in the studio with us. Rebecca works for Bloomberg covering work culture, and she also is a co-host of the new podcast, Game Plan, which is really excellent.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. I was actually paying attention. I don't know why. I love our theme music. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like super slow, but fun and kind of video gamey.
It gets faster.
Oh, no. It definitely picks up. But it's just listening to Game Plan, I really like your guys' intro music.
Can thank our producer for that.
What is the intro music?
Now I can't think of it because I have yours stuck in my head. But when it comes on, it's very upbeat.
Yeah.
It's kind of video gamey too, actually.
I'm pretty sure it's Even Flow by Pearl Jam. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. No? Even Flow.
I was going to say it's Crash Test Dummies. David is vetoing that choice. Your Game Plan is actually produced by the wonderful and talented Liz Smith, who is our old producer.
Yeah, so she's so great. Yeah, she's really a great, obviously has great taste in opening music.
Yes.
Did she find your opening music too?
No, actually the music was found is a friend of Phil's, Tufu.
Yeah.
Chufu. I always say that one wrong.
Yeah, Liz Smith is the best producer that has ever worked for Heritage Radio. David? No? Chime in, David? No?
He has to respect those who came before him.
Yeah.
Has Liz ever talked to you about her early childhood taste in music?
She makes fun of me for my taste in music.
Liz, to this day, still loves Hanson.
Hanson came on not our podcast, but our sister podcast, which I'm going to mention and get so many props for, Material World. And they came on to talk about their beer business, that they have like a craft brewery now.
Do you know how much, I don't know why I did this, but they're, I guess the 25th anniversary or something of Umbop. 20-year anniversary.
Yeah, they just did a performance or something.
So I just was like, I wonder what they're up to. So I just did like, and never listened to the band. I only know the one song, but they're just kind of, you know, like some weird phenomenon. And you know how much the drummer is worth?
A lot?
$40 million.
What? What do you mean?
Is it from his beer business?
I don't know. Well, the other two are with $20 million. I just said, you know, Hanson, and then net worth, one of the celebrity net worth websites came up, and the two brothers are worth $20 million each, but the drummer, that little kid that used to be this tall, is worth $40 million. I guess he just, like, took his money and invested it somehow.
Yeah.
Or,
we should all be one-hit wonders.
Yeah, I know.
That's the way. The ticket.
Yeah.
I'm late to the game, but I still have it in me. Yeah. I don't know what that pop breakout's going to be. It's going to be something like a Call Me Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Great Aww. Song.
Yeah. Summer Jam 3 yeah. years ago.
Yeah.
So how's it been going? How many episodes are you into on Game Plan?
We have done 4. We have every week we put out an episode, so next week will be our 5th. And they go by so fast.
Yeah.
You put in all this time, and then they're just gone out there in the world.
And then everyone's just demanding yeah. one another.
And they think
it takes a lot of work to make
so
it.
So easy, and it's not. It's really fun, though. I have had so much fun doing the show. My background is not in audio,
yeah.
really, so it's been a learning experience. And you have so much respect for people who have a good rapport and are good at speaking and good at putting together stories. It's a skill. You guys, props.
It must be really challenging.
Did you learn that on our podcast?
I did.
So, yeah.
How did the podcast come about?
I had an idea with a coworker that we should make a podcast because podcasts are kind of great. They're very great. And what I cover is workplace culture, and that is just something people love to talk about. The stuff I write gets so much attention because everybody works and everybody hates email and everybody uses these new tools. And even people who don't work in offices can relate to, we did an episode on office jargon, for example, and I was hanging out with a furniture builder last night and a teacher, and I work in an office, and everybody, we were all talking about jargon. So it's really a relatable topic that there aren't any podcasts about. So let's do it.
So here's, something that I learned in the jargon episode is that I like jargon. Typically, I find that I really, really like jargon. But I figured out that it's a little different than the jargon that you were talking about in your episode. Because I grew up with a dad that does like general contracting, at least on the side. And so I find that jargon related to a very specific topic is effective in that it like helps you communicate a really specific idea
yeah.
very exactly, because you're using the exact term, the exact name, and it's okay if you're not using it to be like exclusive. But the jargon that you use in emails that like represents kind of like non
yeah
feelings, I'm drawing a blank on on what that would be, but just like the
yeah I'm trying
placeholders, like let's you know, let's loop it up and
like circle back or ping me. It just sounds really dorky
and is also not doing the jargon like being a more effective way of communicating.
Yeah, people use jargon to not really say what they want to say often. I think that's why people hate it so much. But I agree with you that sometimes it's useful. And yeah. it's like a language. Like, I actually do know what someone means when they say, let's circle back. It means, we'll talk about this later.
That one's fine. I don't mind that one.
Like, yeah, but people hate it. I mean, I'm with you. I'm team, we can use jargon sometimes, but people are really sensitive.
Yeah, I guess there's different kinds of jargon.
Is there podcast jargon?
I don't know. David, do you have any podcast jargon or
riffing?
Sure.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Podcast jargon or maybe like audio engineering jargon?
Yeah, print that. Yeah, we're printing that.
I don't know what that means.
Print that mix.
Yeah, that's nope, those aren't words to me. Okay. That's not a sentence.
Okay. Yeah. publishing has a lot of jargon.
Yeah, I mean, I work in pub journalism. Dates. Yeah, there's lots of words we use to sound cool. Like, we don't call it a headline, it's a head. And the like subhead below that is a deck. And okay. we say pubbing. It's just, it's like you're making something that to just sound cool or like exclusive. It excludes some people from the club.
I think though it kind of maybe comes out organically though.
Yeah, it does.
You know,
like it's like language.
Restaurant, obviously restaurant.
Yeah, there's gotta tons. Be a ton.
There's tons, you know.
What's a good one?
You know, the weeds.
The Weeds.
You know what The Weeds is?
No.
In the Weeds?
Yeah, In the Weeds. That means that, like, you know, you get, like, three tables at one time, and they're all really needy, and you get you're so busy all at once that you can't even organize your mind, and you kind of get in the weeds.
That's
so interesting, because we have a term in the weeds also in writing, mm-hmm. and it's when you can't really... You're like too deep in the topic, like you're in the weeds.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different, yeah. but it's the same jargon.
Yeah, or 86, obviously.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of everywhere.
David, did you find any more audio ones?
Did I find any more? Like, I'm Googling them right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm asking. I can't see what you're doing. You're in the booth.
No, I was going to make a joke that, like, I could say I'm in the weeds with hosts and shows on this network sometimes. But that's not really a joke. That's kind of true.
You're just working really hard
yep.
over there. Mm-hmm.
Your job sounds really difficult. There must be a lot of challenges.
There's a lot of buttons to push.
He's pretending to Google audio jargon, but yeah, he's really Googling his drummer Hanson naked.
Oh God! In an incognito window, of course.
Yeah. I keep referencing a recent episode where you had on journalist, and he talked about politeness in the office.
Yeah, that was a really fun episode. We did an episode about being nice at work, because there's this theory that work has become not nice, that everyone's just trying to get ahead and is really callous. And we had on this guest, Paul Ford, who is a writer and also owns a small business. And he wrote this great essay about how he's lived his life as a very polite person. And in it, he talks about this party trick, which I love so much, that he uses, that he says gets people to talk to him and open up to him. And it's anytime he's at a party and he meets someone, inevitably their job will come up. And he'll be like, "What do you do?" And they'll tell him. And then he'll say, "Oh, that sounds really hard. Why don't you tell me more about that?" And he says it just, people love it. Mm-hmm. They just...
It's that instant validation.
Yeah, you're like, it is hard.
It's so challenging.
Because people are narcissistic, ego maniacs.
Yeah, and we just want someone to, like, acknowledge us.
Yeah, because everyone thinks that what they do is challenging in some way, and it probably is. But just for someone to say that off the bat, you're like, wow. You yeah. get me.
Like, you care. And but we joked with him that it's so hard to say that sincerely, to say, like, that must be hard. Just when I say that, I think it sounds, like, ironic and callous and not.
That sounds so hard.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, try that at a party. See if you make some friends.
What is the most common work culture either question or complaint that you come across? I'm pretty new to the office life. And I've really recently just stepped into a creative agency, which is another dynamic of office life. Mm-hmm. A little bit more, I think, structured like corporate.
Yeah. People often complain not about their actual work. No one ever complains about their job, you know, the actual work of the job. People always complain about kind of their, like, basic human needs, like air conditioning or... office temperature is a huge one, or etiquette in the office, or just, like, the fact of having to be in a building with a bunch of people you did not choose to be with on a daily basis, which is a kind of a weird thing that we have to do. And people are always, always complaining about that aspect of the job. And that's, I think those are the stories that people tend to read about, where they feel like their feelings are validated, basically.
So what is your day job?
So my day job is I'm a reporter at Bloomberg, and I mostly write stories about kind of office culture phenomenon. So that's everything from what we wear to work, to where we sit, to how we eat, to boring kind of HR stuff, mm-hmm. even benefits and health insurance. So that's what I cover. Mm-hmm. And then I do the podcast also, nice. The Game Plan Show.
My favorite, Archer, I love the cartoon, but one of my favorite aspects of the show is, like, the heavy HR side of it, and, like, Pam and Cyril always arguing about, like, flex bucks and flex cash. Honestly, anything I know about health insurance or pensions comes from listening to that show, and I'll make jokes with other people like I understand what flex bucks are, and I really don't.
What is it? I've never even heard that.
Flex bucks is I think just maybe built into an insurance package, so you have maybe it goes towards what's that down payment, your not your deposit, your deductible.
Mm-hmm.
I sound like an idiot right now. I'm not very experienced in adulting.
Yeah.
but it's something like that. And like if you don't use them in like a year, then they go away or they roll over, you know, like all these different kinds of plans that I know nothing about. But
I don't really watch Archer, and I'm loving that they have an HR plot line.
Oh,
Archer's the best.
It's the B to C story of every episode.
That's amazing.
It's just like the stupid bureaucracy of...
There is so much bureaucracy in the office, and maybe this is your experience having kind of gone to a more corporate setting, but it's very odd at first. I don't know if it kind of weirded you out.
Well, my setting's very casual. It's a very small boutique company, but they all come from corporate ad agencies, so I think that they've brought along the procedures that... You know, that like, you know, the structure to organization of projects and the structure to creative meetings, that's really great. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of dropped a lot of the other
unnecessary,
like, yeah,
culture stuff,
like printing out proofs and having everyone like physically initial them to make sure everyone signs off.
Yeah, it's just offices try really hard to create what they like to call culture. And a lot of it is completely BS.
Is there any examples of like really successful culture or companies that have created really successful culture that are something to model or look at?
So, I mean, the company that everybody has been modeled after now, so when in startup culture is really popular right now, is because Google was so successful, and Google has a famously laid back culture where people, you know, can wear what they want. And that was pretty novel at the time when they started. They were pushing back against a more buttoned up culture. And then because they were so successful, all these companies thought that that was the secret to success, was to have like a ball pit and snacks. And it's not, it's just, that's more the product of their success than anything else. So that's the company that everybody models themselves after.
At Etsy. I don't know if have you ever spent time at Etsy?
I'm trying to think if I have. I don't think I have, but do they have
it's ridiculous. Like, okay, you get there for breakfast, and they have organic nuts and granola. They literally have five different types of coffee. They have coffee on tap, cold brew on tap. They have the Keurig things. They have espresso. They have drip coffee. They have French press. Literally.
Amazing.
23 different types of tea, and not the cheap teas. All organic fruit. And that's just for breakfast. And then once or twice a week, they actually bring in a restaurant or a chef to cook for them. And it's 550 people in an hour and a half.
Wow.
So we've actually done it a few times.
It.
Yeah. And so it's so neat because, like, even if you have an onion that you put in the dish, they want to know where the onion came from. It's really hardcore organic.
Wow. Yeah. That's kind of great. And if you work there, that's awesome.
And they also have, like, wine, like, red and white wine on tap and beer and all that.
So I just, next week, have a story coming out. I'm going to plug it, about co-working spaces. Are you, like, kind of WeWork? Do you know? Are you guys familiar?
When does your podcast air? Or what is your podcast release?
Our podcast is Wednesday morning. This is a print online.
We should.
Is going to come out on the Sunday after the show.
Okay. So I will have had a story.
This past Wednesday.
I have been working on a story about co-working spaces, kind of like WeWork type places. I don't know if you guys are familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a week at... There are over 100 co-working brands in New York City.
Wow.
And I spent a week at a lot of them. And they're kind of like the 2.0 of kind of the Etsy thing you were talking about. Because WeWork attracted all these people by having beer on tap. That was their signature thing. But now, if you're a co-working brand, you have to do more than that to attract people. So I spent time at one called Primary. It's in downtown Manhattan, and their thing is all wellness. And they have, like, kombucha and green juices, and you do yoga. It's so crazy. Like, that's your office.
Yeah.
Just at 1 p.m., there's a legitimate yoga class going on.
I like that in theory.
Yes.
I don't know if that is how I work best. I don't know. It kind of seems.
You know what does work good? Do you know about nap rooms?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did a whole bunch of studies, and people that allow their employees to take like a 20-minute nap in the afternoon or in the mid morning, it actually increases productivity. Actually, oddly enough, if you have an office with 1,000 people and people are allowed to take naps, you save money on coffee, oddly enough, because everybody drinks 10 coffees to push themselves through, you know, the day. And then if they do this one 20-minute nap, they don't drink as much coffee.
Yeah, I actually tested, there are all these napping devices for napping at work because it's apparently supposed to work. But a lot of companies don't have nap rooms. So I tested all these weird like head pillows and tried to nap in the office, and it was a complete disaster, but you can watch it on video. It was filmed.
How do we find that?
If you use your Googling skills, I'm confident you can find it.
Office nap reviews. I've seen, because it's like the inflatable pillow hood things.
Yeah, they're gross, to be honest. Okay. They get really smelly. Just find a nap room or like a hallway.
Yeah.
So the Netflix, they have a really interesting work culture. Like, they push their employees, you know, basically, if you're not adding to the company, there's no room for you. But that being said, they have unlimited vacation in a year. They're really flexible. And I think that, for me, that's like the greatest benefit. Someone that's flexible with time, because I'll get it done. I'll do whatever
that's
needs to be done, but I'll do it on my time, because sometimes I just want to work at midnight.
That's the number one thing that employees really want, is flexibility. And my theory is that we want to be treated like adults, but often the workplace it treats people kind of like children.
Yeah.
Like, you are back in elementary school.
Well, because you have to be, there has to be a hierarchy, and there has to be a boss, and then that goes down.
Right. And I think it's jarring for people like us, who you are in the real world and you control your own time, and you're like, I'm a responsible person. If I don't get my work done, like, I know I'm going to get fired or not perform well, so why don't you let me do it on my time? But the workplace just wasn't set up for that. You know, it's set up for, you know, it evolved from Industrial Revolution, 9 to 5, clocking in, and it evolved from jobs that weren't like our types of creative jobs, but were more like, oh no, you're going to spend 8 hours building this truck and you're only going to make so many parts.
They're more dependent
time.
On you being physically present.
There for a certain amount of hours. And the workplace hasn't quite evolved out of that, but it is starting to, like you said, with some of the flexible hour stuff.
Yeah.
And employees love that.
So we're talking about workplace culture and podcast and anything and everything with Rebecca Greenfield. We're going to take a quick break and then we will be right back.
And this one's called Third Degree Rug Burns by Techstar. We'll be right back.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to the main course. We have a little communication problem with David in the engineering booth. Give me eyes. I didn't know what you were telling me to do.
No, I was just saying hello.
We were chatting.
With our minds.
we always let the break run away with us.
Yeah.
Like, get caught into conversation. It's like we're here to talk on the radio, and then like break comes, everyone starts chatting. You guys do your show a little bit differently, because we're live to tape, so it's just off the cuff. You guys do more produced segments, so you don't sit down.
Yeah, I think that's, we're luckier. It's harder to do live.
You think?
Yeah, because you can edit it to sound. Liz, the producer who we cannot stop praising, is a great editor. She edits out all my dumb things I say and my likes, and she makes me sound a lot better. But yeah, we do it in piecemeal, and it comes out better for me.
Yeah. I really like just doing the live take. I like just sitting down and putting it out there. Phil, what about you?
I kind of like live. I like to stand by what I say when I say it.
Yeah.
Unembarrassedly.
I think
is that a word, unembarrassedly?
Now it is.
There it is.
I think doing produced pieces is like definitely interesting. Actually, what we did last week with the event that was kind of produced, and David helped us with that, doing
cutting
interviews.
Cutting out a couple naughty parts.
Cutting out a couple naughty parts.
Did that.
Thank you. Also, just like introducing intros to everything. It was fun, but it also seems like a lot of work.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. It can be exhausting when you have to take another take of something that you just had a whole conversation about. But I like someone described my show as more of a variety show, which I think is kind of fun to listen to. It has breaks. It's not just one thing happening.
How long is your show after it's edited?
It's between 20 and 30 minutes.
So you record for like 45 minutes and then cut it down? Or?
Well, I don't even know how long it is because we have to do separate tapings. Like we'll have someone come in for an interview, cut their interview down. We'll do an intro, cut that down.
End up with more like an hour.
Probably,
or so.
Yeah. Yeah, our episode last week is our most produced show, and it was really fun to put together. We kind of did a little bit in This American Lifestyle, tried to be poke fun at that style a little bit.
I like the half-baked takes.
Oh, yeah. That was my co-host, Francesca, who's not here right now, her idea, and it is our favorite segment. In half-baked takes, we talk about ideas that we just, opinions we have that aren't fully formed. And it's just our half-baked take. So,
give an example, yeah.
One example that I have was that I would like, so this is something you wouldn't know about unless you worked in an office, but I would like to kill elevator chivalry. Like, there are all these men I work with, and they hold the elevator door open for you to let the woman out, but it causes a huge traffic jam. And it's not like they're even doing me a favor by like activating the sensor in the elevator door. Just like, don't do that. Let's just everyone walk out of the elevator. I don't need my coworkers to show me how chivalrous they are. It's kind of weird. So that's an example of a half-baked take.
You know, I get accused of being chivalrous sometimes, and I'll call people ma'am. But I'm also from the South. I'll be
it's
like,
a Southern thing.
Yeah, but it's like also, you know, there's certain things like holding doors for people.
That,
you know,
it seems like a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
For any, that's nice.
Yeah.
Like hold any gender can hold the door for someone.
Yeah, and I don't do it. I don't even do it gender specific, but it seems though sometimes women are the one that get offended by it because they think I'm doing it just because they're a woman, but it's not true.
I have a really like specific opinion about this, and it has nothing to do with like the you know, male female aspect of it. I get mad at my boyfriend a lot for it. I think you have to use your judgment in a situation, especially when you're in a place like New York. We'll be walking side by side, or he'll be like kind of in front of me, and then we'll get to a, you know, construction on the sidewalk that narrows you into like a single file, and he'll like kind of stop, and then that forces me to stop behind him, and then he'll like walk to behind me and then like let me go forward.
Problem.
I'm like, no, you need to evaluate and just. You go first. Like if it's like a stupid New York thing that I also need to slow down, but it's just like if you're like causing a traffic jam or a bottleneck in order to like turn around and be more chivalrous, like
exactly,
it annoys me.
In the right situation, it's appreciated.
I actually hung out with this girl for like a minute, kind of a year ago, but she like accused me of not being chivalrous enough, but she was so weird. Like one of the things was like, oh, the man should always walk on towards the street just in case there's ever a splash. Like that's supposed to be some etiquette. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm sorry. You live in New York City. You have to be okay getting dirty and germs all over you.
Yeah. So she'd call me on a couple of things like that, like, you know, open doors, like you should do that. I'm like, I've been kind of brainwashed by feminism my whole life. But then like she would do things.
We're going to, that would be the title of the episode.
Yes.
Brainwashed by feminism.
Yes. I don't actually believe in any of it. I've just been brainwashed. No. Of course I believe in it. But then she got drunk and then like, she would like be like, let me see your phone and grab it from me. I'm like, you don't know what I'm thinking, like a lady now, are you? You know, like, so it goes both ways.
You're like the most kind person. You're very thoughtful. I think mindfulness is what it comes down to, like being mindful, and then that's all we need, right?
Yeah.
Like being thoughtful and mindful. And sometimes that means getting off the elevator first, so you remove your big fleshy body from being an obstacle for all of us to walk around.
Exactly. I think chivalry is weirder at work, because these are people you work with, and mm-hmm. there's no place for that in the office. And then also, I think people just do it to feel good about themselves. Like they did a good deed to their coworker. And
Okay, let's get deep now. So you as girls, if you meet a guy and you're just, you know, it's a new relationship, let's say.
Okay.
And he picks you up in a car. And then he goes around and opens the passenger door. Is that a good sign or a bad sign?
I would definitely note it. I would file that away as a data point, but I wouldn't be sure how to judge him yet.
Yeah, I would love that. I would absolutely love that. Really? I would not expect it every time, but you know, I think we're all way too jaded in this world where we're like, you know, I'm a modern woman, and so that makes me uncomfortable. What a creep. I would never see him again. You know, like, that's always, like, this kind of jokey reaction.
But it's like with a stranger, though, as a guy, with the stranger, it's always a toss-up. Mm-hmm. Like, because it can go, like, people can read it both ways, and there's no right or wrong.
Yeah, they really can't. Yeah.
Like, why the fuck did you just have to open my door? Or why didn't you open the door?
Are we really in this world, like, where we think that yes. gesture means
yes.
that the person is implying that I'm not physically able to? I think it's
or the opposite, or the what about the inverse, though, of, like, why did they do that?
You know? I just don't overanalyze things that much. I think it's cute in its antiquated way. I think it's an interesting gesture when it's hard to make other gestures in our modern world. It's like, that's something that stands out, and that's something you physically can do.
I kind of like her answer, though, because then, like, you know, and then if you're at a restaurant and then he orders for you and then cuts your steak
and
for you.
Okay, he's that guy. Like, I don't need that guy.
Then you know why he opened the door for you at the car. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's just notable.
Yeah, notable, yeah.
But
we'll see.
Another thing that you would be surprised at how many differing opinions people have is about the man paying for the woman on a date. That is a conversation I have with friends all the time. We all have different opinions. Yeah,
I'm done with that. I'm just like, but also too, like, well, my whole theory, whenever I go out to eat with anybody, whether it's one person or 10 people, my rule is I'm okay for paying for everybody or not paying at all. I'm okay. Because it's eating dinner with somebody is such an intimate thing. And I've spent 30 years of my life working in restaurants, watching people literally get in like 10 minute arguments about one glass of wine. And there's like 8 people. I didn't order the wine. You did. You know, like, are you kidding me? If you all just shut up and put in 75 cents, it's done.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm okay paying more on a restaurant bill sometimes because that's what happens when you go out to dinner.
But then if it happens 10 times with the same people, then fuck them.
Yeah, maybe they're not good friends.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way.
You're generous. You're very generous.
I always have my card out. Like, I don't care. I'll put it down. I'll pick up the whole check. I get that from my father. I like when a guy pays on a date. I think that's nice. It's not an expected thing every time, but I don't really, when everything becomes so hotly debated, it's just, these are things that I'm not too concerned with.
You're such a girl. <Just kidding.
laughs> I don't know. Please buy my meal.
Yeah
everyone should pay for me all the time.
Yeah. Please, sir, may I have another? I guess that would be Oliver, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Phil, what is running... three restaurants. You've worked in... I know. You've worked in restaurants your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, most all of
it. I did work in an office job for about a week.
How was that? What was that like?
I was like... nobody's taking their shirt off. I haven't made out with anybody. Nobody's gotten in a fight. Nobody's drunk. And I'm
none
like,
none of that happens.
And I'm like,
at the office.
Literally, like, ooh, I have a good story. I actually worked, it was actually more like about 3 weeks. I actually took a couple different office jobs. So it was just this weird, I don't even know what they did. But part of the training process was, they had a telemarketing thing. So to work in the office, you had to work in the telemarketing for just a week to see what it kind of taught you what the company was about. I don't even remember what the company was. So there was like this orientation, and there was like 15 of us. And there was this woman, she probably had to be about 50 years old. She was probably about, I'd say about 5'1", and literally the most round person I've ever seen. You can't even call her fat, but she just literally was a round shaped person, and a very androgynous haircut, no makeup, just very plain, and wearing her, you know, khaki suits and tucked in white shirt. And so everybody got this, like, you know, she was like the boss of the floor or whatever, and everybody got their own cubicle, and I was the last person. and there was not a cubicle for me. So she's like, oh, well, here, you can use my cubicle. Now, I thought it was weird because she was like the head person of the floor, but her cubicle was exactly the same size and shape of every other person's cubicle on the floor, which I thought that was odd. Kind of like, you know, very like, I don't know, Soviet Union kind of thing.
Populist.
But so she was very adamant. She's like, do not touch anything in this cubicle. Don't. All you need is a computer and the phone. Don't you touch any of my stuff. And I was like, okay, fine. So the cubicle was decorated with all these postcards that were like, happy birthday, wish you were here, blah, blah, mission, you know, doing it. And then I just got bored. And then I was just like, I just want one. I'm just going to take one. And it was literally, like, I mean, I don't know if you guys will appreciate this. I got frightened because every single card was blank. And I just got like, I thought she was going to catch me and kill me because it was just, but it was like the saddest thing.
That is,
it was like, happy birthday. I love you so much. And, you know, we wish you were here. Here we are. You're not here, but we love you. You know, like every single like holiday, and every one of them was blank. And then I just like, I just went like, I just got so like, it was frightening and sad. And I had an anxiety attack and I just went like this and I just ran out.
And that was your last day.
Yeah. No, I was there for like an hour and a half. And then I just started seeing all the blank cards. I'm like, I gotta get the fuck out of here.
That's really sad.
Maybe she
creepy.
Just collected postcards.
Yeah.
Yes,
those stories always make me so sad.
Yeah. She collects, then there weren't postcards. They were greeting cards. And she collects happy birthday greeting cards.
Yes, the offices are weird.
Yeah.
They're weird.
People are weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the thing that I wouldn't like about working in an office is you know, working in restaurants, you basically know everything that's going on with everybody's life because all you're doing, especially front of the house, all you're doing is talking. And when it's the beginning of the shift, you're setting up, you're just talking, what did you do last night? No, I got drunk, oh, I fell in love, you know, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's talking about their most intimate details. And then, you know, before and after work. And then after work, you go out and, you know, you hang out and go to a bar. And so it's just like, you know everybody, like everything about everybody in 6 months. Whereas, like, you can be in an office and, like, you know, 30 years later, you're like, oh, Bill, I didn't know you had twin daughters, you know? You know, like, you know.
I think that's starting to change a little bit now.
A little bit, yeah.
People.
With the whole Google, you know, and startup culture.
And there's a replacement for email called Slack, mm-hmm. where people are chatting all day now at work, like online chatting, and you end up getting to know people and sharing things a little bit more. And offices, more modern offices, believe that people should bring their real selves to work because it helps them do better work. But I
that
still
sounds
think
like jargon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still think that people have a wall up, but I mean, I go out with my coworkers and I have friends at work and I know things about people, but I don't think it's as extreme as like the guy next to me. I don't even know he has kids. Like I know all my people who sit near me all about their children.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, it's not as, nobody's like openly hooking up with anybody.
Yeah.
There's rumors.
Yeah. This is kind of like a term that I definitely know, but is also, I think, come into popularity in the last like 2 years. And it happens a lot in the restaurants too. Work wives and work husbands.
Oh yeah.
But it's like now that everyone's connected on the internet, it just feels like everyone is sort of talking about it more.
So I've heard of that term. And it's someone you have at work who's like your work best friend kind of, but of the opposite gender, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
And like you,
I guess you could have like I could have a work
you could
wife
have a work
as
wife.
An option.
Yeah, and there's somebody.
You could be married to. I could be married to a woman, but then I could have a work husband.
Yeah, yeah. Someone that's like your pal, but it's like closer. I guess you're not just friends. It's like
Pam and whatever John Krasinski's
Jim
relationship, like that they highlighted in Office.
Right, but
like
before they were actually together romantically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the person you kind of like, you both are in it together at work. Maybe Liz is my work wife. Liz the producer.
Ooh, fight.
I'll fight you for Liz. it happens a lot. I know in restaurants too, because, you can have like multiple in a restaurant, but there's always like that person that you lean on a little bit more for support and help. Restaurants also have like a structure of like work you know, moms and work dads and work, like, siblings.
Yeah, restaurants are particular in that way. But yeah. I think we all, anywhere we work, we need someone to help us get through it. I mean, it's hard to not have friends at work. It's just like, how do you deal with all this shit? You need someone.
Yeah, you need the support.
You need it. Especially restaurants, I think, because it's so intense when it's intense. Maybe that's why people become so close.
Yeah.
And also, I think I've heard from people who work in restaurants, you're on, like, the restaurant schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of, those are your people.
You need someone to commiserate with.
Well, that's the other thing I like about restaurants, which, you know, obviously I didn't know that thing about Netflix, like Infinite Vacations, but you know, besides that one, is what I like about restaurants is, like, I could decide, well, now I own restaurants, so I can do whatever the fuck I want. But back when I worked at bars or restaurants, like if I decided I want to go to the Keys tomorrow, I literally can get my shifts covered in 12 hours notice.
Right.
People always want to pick up shift and make more money. So I like that. Like, I don't have to, like, write, get the form, get somebody to sign it, send it to HR, and, you know, like, get, like, you know, vacation approved, like, a month away. I can just be like, I'm not coming to work for the next 4 days. Who wants to work my shift? Done.
Yeah. It sucks. I have so much anxiety about even asking for a vacation, which is so ridiculous because get that and deserve it. So I agree. I think, again, it's the whole, like, being treated like an adult thing. Like, in our adult lives, we feel like we should be able to do whatever we want. But then I have to, like, ask someone to go on a vacation.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I'm so bad at asking for that kind of stuff. It makes me uncomfortable. Like, as soon as I need to work on that kind of communication, like, as soon as I know something, I need to, like, bring it up and tell them, like, oh, I have a wedding in LA. It's these dates. Want to, you know, tell you sooner than later. Yeah. I don't know why that's such a hard conversation.
I'm going to say it's gendered. I think it's hard for women to do those things. I don't know.
Agreed. Yeah. For me, I feel it. It's maybe a little, like, disappointment thing. Want to be, you know, don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I actually.
Asking for things for myself.
I'm in this scenario right now. I got someone give me a free ticket to the U.S. Open. Obviously, I have to take the day off, but I haven't even asked because I'm scared. How dumb is that? It's like next week.
Yeah. Just don't show up.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
All the best games are at night anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
I love going to the U.S. Open. I should grab a ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's neat.
I go every year.
People are still playing tennis in Rio right now, and then they just go straight from there to here.
Yeah.
Well, the winners, at least, are still there.
Rebecca Greenfield... Thank you so much for coming on to our show. Rebecca covers work culture for Bloomberg. She also is the co-host of the new podcast Game Plan, which if you can tell us where we can find it, I'm sure.
It's on iTunes and at Bloomberg.com, and you can Google Game Plan Podcast, and we'll be there for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Happy Sunday.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Shine through.